The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
In a moment, I'm going to be speaking to Mohamed Shalan, who's an orthopaedic surgeon based here in Ireland and just back from working in Gaza. But first, I want to go to Chris Andrews, the Sinn Féin senator, who is on board a ship as part of the Freedom Flotilla destined for Gaza, of course, attacked by Israeli drones the other night. Chris, where in the world are you exactly right now?
We're just off the coast of southern Crete, and the weather was quite stormy. So we came in to do a few jobs in terms of refueling and are getting, you know, more resources or supplies in for food and stuff like that. And a couple of people had to leave for medical reasons, and we're just here waiting for the weather to improve a little bit. And then our next stop is Gaza to bring the aid to Gaza and open up that humanitarian corridor peacefully, you know, in a peaceful way.
Tell me about these attacks from drones.
That the night before last that happened, and I suppose it was just quite a, you know, tense time. And but last night was peaceful, and we're ready and determined and in good form to sail to Gaza.
And when did you become aware that something was happening? Did people spot the drones?
We all take turns. So the boat I'm on is the Spectre. There's 22 people on it, and we take turns in terms of night watch because of what happened in Tunis a few weeks ago when they were attacked by drones as well. So we have night watch as well, and it was about 1 o'clock when half one when boats were attacked. Our boat was hit four times by devices from drones, and luckily there was no one damaged, nobody injured, and no damage done to the boat. And so that's what there's just someone, the sea's quite rocky and someone fell on me there.
All right, this is the reality of it.
There's 22 people on the boat, all nationalities, and you know, so it's quite cramped, but we take turns to keep an eye out for the drones, and they're quite visible when you see them. So then when we saw them, we came downstairs, and then we heard the explosions then when each one hit the boat. So, but like I say, everybody's still determined and ready. As long as the boat can sail, we're going to sail.
Yeah.
Because it's really important that, you know, we keep the focus on what's happening in Gaza, the genocide, the man-made famine. And I suppose also equally the dismantling of international law by Israel and the United States, which is worrying for not just for people in Gaza, but for humanity, for everybody across the globe, because it seems now that the only people with access to international law are the powerful and the wealthy. And that's something we have to challenge as well. So I suppose over time, the need for a humanitarian flotilla has become more and more important.
It must have been nerve-wracking all the same when you were below decks and you could hear explosions above you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it is. Yeah, there's no denying. It is an anxious time, a tense time. And if they had hit some of the diesel in the generators, it could have been a lot worse. So we're in many ways very lucky, you know. And but again, we're determined to head to Gaza and create, you know, it's a non-violent flotilla, and we are determined to bring food, baby formula, because each day you think Israel can't get any worse, and each day you're wrong, because Israel does get worse every day.
And what level of protection have ye? Because there have been reports about you know, the Spanish or the Italians sending naval vessels to escort you, but then kind of counter reports that they're not going to use force to protect what they're describing as irresponsible behaviour from the flotilla. So there's a bit of confusion about to what degree they're protecting ye or shepherding ye away.
Yeah, it is hard to know. That is true. It's hard to know. And to be honest with you, we can't control what they are all saying and doing. We know we need to open up a humanitarian corridor. We need to break the blockade into Gaza. And it's really important we do that. And our boat is able to sail, and that's where we're going. And that's, we can only, like I say, control what we're going to do. And that's what our plans are to do.
How far away are you in terms of days travel from Gaza? All going well?
Well, all going well, at an average speed of 5 knots, we'd be there in 4.5 days. But because there's 50 boats on this mission, on this flotilla, some boats are slower than others. And so we're trying to move together. So the average speed is probably about 4 knots. So it could be like 5 days, max 6.
Mm.
Best option, best scenario is 4.5.
And amongst those kind of organising this, or people who've been through it before, what's the security advice that they're giving you in terms of at what point in that journey do they suspect, if things are going to come to a head, that they will come to a head?
Well, I've been on 4 previous flotillas since 2008. Everyone is different. Every flotilla is different. In 2008, I was successful in terms of the boat I was on getting through and bringing aid through to Gaza, but we were only a single boat. Another time, the authorities wouldn't leave us off the island of Cyprus. So, and then another time, we had the boat sabotaged. They cut the shaft on the propeller, and so then we went back again. And on the MV Saoirse in 2011. And that boat, we got close to Gaza, but then we were intercepted and jailed for a week and deported. So every boat, every flotilla is different. There's a different dynamic. This one is really big. It's like, I suppose this one is 50 boats, and 44 different nationalities. So It's a very, and I suppose, you know what this flotilla is? It shows and highlights the disconnect between what ordinary people want. And what governments are doing and saying, because ordinary people want to do something, and because government has failed to do what we are doing now, which is trying to open up a corridor into Gaza, governments have failed to do that. They should have done that. So ordinary people are doing that from across the globe, and it's really important that the Irish authorities and the other nationalities' authorities would, you know, ensure that that's a safe passage.
Chris, listen, stay safe, and thanks a million for speaking to us.
Thank you. Take care.
Chris Andrews there, the Sinn Féin senator on board the Spectre boat in the flotilla. Mohamed Shalan is with me now, an orthopaedic surgeon who has worked in Gaza. Mohamed, you're welcome to the show, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Can you describe what the daily conditions were like for you and your colleagues working in Gaza?
Hi, Kiran. Thank you for having me. The daily life there, it is different from anywhere in the world, you know, because bombing is 24/7, drones 24/7. The sound of F-35 and F-16 is terrible. And also the bombing was very close to us. So if you sleep at night, you are not sure you will get up in the morning or you being killed. When I was there, there is no space or no area in Gaza is safe at all. Every space in Gaza is can be targeted. And also the pollution in the air, like smokes, dust, and life there is very, very difficult. Also, the access to everything, like access to the toilet, access to get a shower, it is very, very hard. For us, we were like a medical practitioner, and we have priority for everything, but also it was very difficult for us. Availability of clean water, it wasn't there. So we had to manage what like normal people there.
And tell me then how you managed to carry out surgical procedures given those conditions or given your limited access to medical resources.
Yeah, when I was there is lack of everything like anesthetics, antibiotics, analgesics, and also instruments. Like I am orthopedic surgeon, we deal with metal, and the instruments, it help us a lot to make the surgery easy. But when I was there in Gaza, a lot of instruments deficient, so we had to manage what we have, because you have patient about to die and you have to save his life or her life or children. So we had to manage with the resources we got. I had experience in working in Africa, so I am used to work in a hard situation, but it is not as similar as in Gaza. In Gaza, it is totally different. And also the like investigations, like X-ray, CT, MRI, there was no MRI at the time. And when I was there, the CT was broken. So you have to manage. Imagine polytrauma patient, patient has multiple injuries, and you get like X-ray only, and you rely on this for your diagnosis and for your management. But this is a situation, so we have to save life for patients, and also we have to give the patient the best treatment. So it was like something critical for us, and it was very new experience. I shared in two wars before, but I never saw injuries like what I saw in 2024 when I was in Gaza.
So it was like the way you're describing it, almost like a primitive version of orthopedic surgery. You kind of had to do with you had to make do with whatever was around you, was it?
Yes, yes, yeah, and what's there is just either plates and screws or some rods, and you have to select the suitable for the patient, and it is very limited. You don't have much to select from it, so you have to manage with what you have. Also, the nature of injuries there, it is not like here in Ireland. It is totally different. It's quite complicated cases. Patient comes with multiple injuries, chest, limbs, pelvis, abdomen. So it is missile injury or patient rescued from under rubbles. So it is something totally different from patients we have here in Ireland. And here in Ireland, we have everything, the modern instruments and whatever we need, it is available. But there, even the gauze, you know, to dry the blood from the field while you are working, it wasn't available. And we used to squeeze the one we used and reuse it again. This never happened with me at all. But as I told you, you have to manage with what you have.
And what about then post-surgery care? And I mean that from, you know, a medical point of view, but also just in terms of nutrition, in terms of having somewhere to rest, in terms of having somewhere to rehabilitate. Could any of that happen as you'd want it to happen?
No. First of all, you have to know where is your patient after surgery, because if you don't know, you will never get your patient to see in the next morning or next day. So I assigned the medical students to follow the patients when they pushed from the recovery to the rooms and to register where is this patient, just to see them, number one. Number two, the rooms is overcrowded, like four-bedded room. You can find nearly 8 or 10 patients, some on the floor, some on the beds, and the beds are very close to each other. Plus the relatives near around the patients, because they don't have space to stay in. Their house is broken or bombed, and they came to the hospital, so there is no place for them, no tents. So it is very difficult situation, because this increases the incidence of infection. If the number of patients or personnel in the room, this increases the risk of infection. Patients there, they got very small amount of food, or just it is carbohydrates mainly. There is no protein at the time, and we advised patients to get a high protein diet, as we used to give patients here, but there it wasn't available. So it was very hard situation. Also, the post-operative care there is no enough physiotherapists to mobilize patients. Like here in Ireland, we mobilize the patient on the second day and it is supervised mobilization. But there, the patient mobilized by his own. And also, the aids to mobilize the patient, like crutches, frame, it wasn't available. Just to put hands on the shoulders of two persons and patient can walk like this way. So it is very, very hard situation, different environment. And I am not sure. Now it is more worse. I am in contact with my colleagues there. It is very worse at the moment.
And how was it for you and your colleagues then, Mohammed? I know your chief concern was your patients when you were there. But as you said right at the outset, I mean, you go to bed at night, you don't know if a rocket is going to fall on the building that you're sleeping in. You don't know if it's going to fall on the building you're working in during the day. I mean, it must have been very difficult to work under those conditions from an emotional or a mental point of view, was it?
I think because our main concern is to say people, we quite busy. When we go to, it wasn't bed, it is just a blanket on the floor to sleep on it. When we went to there, you fall asleep straight away. And when I was there at nearly 6 p.m., I came out of the hospital just to walk to the building where we are staying. It is like 100 meters only. And the rocket, it is dropped very close to us. So, as I told you, it is very unsafe. But on the other hand, your brain is busy with the patients and how to help them, how to save them. And most of our time, we spent it in the hospital itself just to save people as much as we can. Because patients there, they come in like mass injury injuries. Or even in the ED, in the casualty, patients on the floor. There is no beds for them to put them on beds. And if you ask for X-ray or to get anything for the patient, they carry patient on their hands to bring them to the X-ray or something like this. And also the hospital was very, very overcrowded with people. So mobility to walk in the hospital, it is not an easy job.
Yeah. Listen, I can't imagine what it was like. Mohammed, thank you for speaking to us. Mohammed Shalan is an orthopaedic surgeon who, as he's been describing, has spent time working in Gaza. Before Mohammed, if you missed it, we did speak to Chris Andrews, the Sinn Féin senator as well, who is on the Freedom Flotilla, on the Spectre, and expecting to leave port near Crete and head towards Gaza. They hope to arrive within the next 4 to 6 days. The word hope doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.